everybody.
What?
Please be seated. Justice Pickering is not on this first case, and Justice Perigary is out of the jurisdiction, but we'll listen to the arguments and then conference with us on this case. And the first case is case number 57084, Gold Ridge Partners versus Sierra Pacific Power Company. Ms. Harrop and Mr. Chapman.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're ready.
May we address the court on procedural matter first?
Oh, certainly.
It is true that they are the appellants and we are the respondents and cross appellants. We're actually here today on a motion, though, not on the actual appeal. It is our motion to remand jurisdiction to the district court. Would we then be the ones to go first or second, Your Honor?
You go first.
Thank you.
It's your motion. Takes me back to my district court days. When the rest of us here take us back to our district court days.
It perplexed us for a moment also, Your Honor. May I also reserve 3 minutes of my time for reply? Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices of the Supreme Court, I am Mike Chapman. My associate is Michelle Stone, representing Sierra Pacific Power Company here today. This case has been tried. It's an eminent domain case. A verdict was awarded. Judgment was entered. Final order of condemnation was entered. After this time, the power company decided that it did not need the property, decided to file a notice of abandonment, which under NRS 37180 abandons the entire case.
Mr. Chapman, let's go back to as we're setting the table here. I was with you up through part of it where we had the entry of the judgment of condemnation, but then, unlike some of the other cases, we had a full payment, which you can still abandon, but then we had technically a vesting of title in short order thereafter, and this was all done by stipulation, so it really compacted the process. Doesn't that kind of turn the statute on its head?
No, Your Honor. The stipulation was merely to arrange for the details of the entry of the judgment, the amount of the interest, the amount of the costs, the payoff of a couple of loans on the property. The stipulation was not to waive the power company's right of abandonment or either party's right of appeal.
But it seemed to expedite the whole process where we normally have this kind of a fallout period of 30 days and nothing's really happening. You can post the money into the court. This was paid directly, I guess, directly to the parties or something of that effect?
No, it was paid into the court and withdrawn by the parties. And under NRS 37170, the power company remained in possession of the property pending the outcome of the case, which is defined in 37.009 subsection 2 as final judgment of condemnation. We don't have that yet. What we have is a judgment of condemnation. We were required to make a deposit of the balance of the verdict, plus the interest and so on, in order to maintain possession during the appeal. The final judgment does not occur until 30 days after we get a judgment, perhaps on remand, retrial, who knows what it would be, or on abandonment, when you end up with a judgment that's unattackable by appeal, by motion for a new trial, and so on, under 37.009. So the power company remains free during this period of time to abandon the condemnation. The landowner's rights are to receive under NRS 37180 a repayment of costs. The costs for the trial have already been paid as part of the judgment. Nevertheless, there's a provision for an attorney's fee. And as long as possession has been taken under 37170, which it has, and there's any damage to the property caused by that possession, the landowner would be entitled to recover the value of that also. The property is still in its native state. The power company has not built anything on the property or anything of that nature.
Mr. Chapman.
Yes, Your Honor.
I appreciate your point about the nature of the judgment, but it does appear from the judgment entered by the court that this is intended to be, under the stipulation, a final judgment of condemnation consistent with what would be the final judgment entered had the parties followed the statutory scheme precisely. My concern and my question is whether the process of entering into stipulations, which appear to circumvent the express language of the statute, is a slippery slope that this court should not sanction.
No, the stipulation, again, was merely to aid the parties in calculating, and the court also, some of the issues which need to be done at the end of any eminent domain case. The calculation of the interest, for example, there's not going to be any disagreement upon that. The amount of the costs were worked out and agreed to by the parties. It was not meant to be a final judgment, and under the statute cannot be a final judgment if somebody appeals it, because it becomes an interlocutory judgment again and essentially a deposit when you make the money. According to the State of Nevada versus the Second Judicial District Court case. And so, for that matter, the stipulation does not bar anything. It simply facilitated the entry of the actual judgment, which is defined under 37.009 subsection 3. It would have become the final judgment had nobody appealed the case. But that didn't happen. Once the appeal was lodged, then we were back into the final judgment stage. And the reason that the state requires a final judgment is a matter of public policy, because once this case goes up on appeal on the issue of value, and that is the sole issue on appeal at this point, there's the possibility that it will be remanded for trial. The property owner may pay less or receive less in the next trial. It may receive more. The right of abandonment is not gone because the power company could abandon after that second trial. Hypothetically, the right of abandonment is not gone. It's not an either-or proposition as they propose in their papers. If it were, 37.170 would not be referenced in 37.180 subsection 2 as a matter under which possession had been taken under the statute, and you can still abandon the statute. The public needs to have the case be a done case, not in open litigation, before it can make a final decision on whether to abandon or not. So for reasons of simply the way the statutes read, as Judge Russell interpreted in the district court, and sound public policy, this case is not a done case until everybody's done litigating, as defined in 37.009 subsection 2.
Well, what was the purpose of entering a judgment of condemnation? Two of them, basically. One is entitled judgment of condemnation, and then the other one is entitled final order of condemnation.
The purpose of entering the judgment of condemnation is to comply with NRS 37.009 subsection 3.
And that's the order that's appealable.
It's appealable,
right?
Correct. But it's not.
So what's so under the stipulation? You all, in effect, proffered yet another document, final order of condemnation,
correct?
Which is I don't find prescribed in the statute until you get to the point where there's no longer an appeal.
That is a possibility.
And that was the point of my question earlier. While I appreciate your point about stipulations dealing with interest and costs, stipulations could deal with a host of other issues that lead to a final order of condemnation, which by statute is intended not to be appealable and presumptively cuts off any claim for abandonment. But once the parties engage in these stipulations, now the court is interpreting stipulations, not statutes of condemnation. And I'm wondering whether this case leads us down that slope.
The answer is no, because that was never the intention by the stipulation to cut off people's rights, the parties' rights. It was always a possibility that the landowners would appeal the judgment. It was always a possibility that the power company would cross-appeal. was always a possibility the court may remand, and there was always a possibility that an abandonment could occur after that. I disagree respectfully with Your Honor when you say or perhaps imply that 37160 final order of condemnation cuts off the right of abandonment. It does not. If that were the operative event, NRS 37180 would say you can abandon at any time prior to the recording of the final order of condemnation. It doesn't say that. A final order of condemnation is the same as a deed. Deeds are rescinded all the time by the courts of this state. A recent example that I ran across is in the foreclosure context. The property was taken for a judgment. The judgment debtor redeemed the property, in which case the person who foreclosed has to go down and record a certificate of redemption to make that happen. So the mere fact that a final order is recorded doesn't change a judgment, an interlocutory judgment, if you will, into a final judgment as specified in the statute. We can't read into 37180, in other words, the language that take final judgment of condemnation out and supply it with, supplant it with, offer or final order of condemnation. Can't do that. You also, if you did that, would be crossing off the 37009 subsection 2 definition of final order of condemnation. Our legislature, and this state for as long as I've been practicing in this area of law, 28 years and many decades before that, has always treated the operative event as the final order of condemnation, not the 37160 final order of condemnation, whether by stipulation or otherwise. And there's not one word in that stipulation, I'm sure you'll agree, Your Honor, where it says the power company is giving up its right to abandon at any time in the future. The right of abandonment is only gone when the case is a done deal. And it's only a done deal after final order of condemnation is.
So, counsel, under your interpretation, then the right of abandonment supersedes any other final order, almost any other final order.
I misspoke a second ago. I said final order of condemnation. I meant to say final judgment of condemnation.
Okay.
The answer is no, not necessarily. What I'm saying is that the right of abandonment stays alive as long as the case is alive. And the case is alive until we have a final judgment of condemnation under NRS 37009 subsection 2.
Therefore, we are to disregard what the record shows us is the agreement among and between the parties to make this final.
There's no agreement to make this the final judgment of condemnation.
I didn't say that. You made an agreement to end the negotiations and essentially the trial process. You certainly can agree with that. The stipulations certainly indicate that.
Well, if that were true, then neither party should have appealed the judgment in the case. So I do disagree with that. It was not intended to necessarily stop the case. It was to get us past the 37009-3 entry of judgment stage so that the additional money that the property owner had received above and beyond the initial deposit by the power company in the case could be deposited with the court so that the power company could remain in possession according to NRS 37170, which is the law, but not cut off the right of appeal and not cut off the right of abandonment. So as long as the case is alive, in other words, as long as we're not past the final judgment of condemnation under 37002, we can abandon.
I'm following your reasoning. I think I'm just sharing the concern that Justice Hardesty expressed with respect to whether or not we're interpreting a stipulation and circumventing a statute. Please, I'm sorry to beat into your time.
Let me ask about equitable estoppel. It's been raised by the other party. How do you feel? Can we use equitable estoppel, or should we remand it and let the trial court use equitable estoppel? Or is it not applicable at all, whether in the appellate court or in the trial court?
You should remand and let the district judge deal with this. Equitable estoppel is not applicable. The landowners have appealed the case, so that means that it's not a final judgment of condemnation yet. Anything can happen. This is not their money. They've received it as a deposit under 37100 initially, 1.2 million of it, and then they received the balance under a 37170 deposit. If they go to court again, if that would be the judgment of the court on the appeal, hypothetically we get past this stage, they would be in a situation where they would perhaps have to pay back some of the award, which is under 37-170 subsection 3, or in a situation where the power company, let's say they won, $200 million or some outrageous number, would abandon again. So we just don't buy their argument at all that the right of abandonment has somehow been abandoned.
You've got about a minute and 19 seconds.
Could I ask one question, sure. And then perhaps you can, Mr. Chapman, a little more time. Mr. Chapman, you used this foreclosure example. I'm curious about that. Was that a judicial foreclosure with the redemption?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, now isn't there a statutory right of redemption? I think it's 21-220, if I remember correct, like that. On a judicial foreclosure, is a one-year right, of statutory right of redemption by the borrower here. So wouldn't that distinguish it from this type of case, or why would you think it's analogous?
I use it simply as an example. That the mere fact that a deed is recorded, and that's what a final order of condemnation is, does not mean that that's necessarily the end of the hunt. In fact, final orders of condemnation are specifically undoable by our Constitution now in the Pistol Amendments. We've cited that in our papers.
Right.
And we refer the court to that just to make the example that the recording of this piece of paper does not cut off the right of abandonment. There's nowhere in the statutes that it says that. And there's plenty of other examples in the law, by analogy, if you will, where deeds and so on can be rescinded and so on. The mere act of recording doesn't stop the process or stop the abandonment.
And I appreciate that. I think the only difference is, and correct me if I'm wrong, on a judicial foreclosure, there is no deed until the one-year right of redemption is up. There's just a certificate of sheriff's sale at the end of the 1 year. If it's not redeemed, then there's a sheriff's deed issued in lieu of a – it's not a trustee's deed because it's a judicial foreclosure. So there isn't any deed that's unwound in that type of situation. And
the sheriff's deed actually issues upon the sale to the
– it does. And it's subject to the right of redemption.
Subject to the right of redemption. Okay. And then upon redemption, the person who had bought the property in the foreclosure needs to then prepare and file a certificate of redemption at the court, which basically creates a trail of the paper.
I see.
This would be the same way. We would simply abandon the condemnation, and a notice of abandonment and the judgment of abandonment would be recorded. This is the same thing we do in eminent domain when we release the lease pendens. We have a lease pendens in every case. It's required when you start these cases under NRS Chapter 37. At the end of the case, that is released off the property because often there's a remainder property involved, and so it's simply a matter of filing a corrective document.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Chair.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. My name is Stacey Harrop, and I'm representing the appellants who have responded to this motion for remand. Mr. Chapman makes a very eloquent argument regarding the statutes. The problem here, in his papers and in his argument, he's completely ignored the constitutional implications here. Once title has vested in a condemnor, the right of abandonment is lost. This is something that's universally held across every state, every federal court that's looked at the issue. And the reason the right to abandonment is lost at that time is at that moment the taking is complete. The landowner's right to just compensation is fully vested. And this makes sense if we think about this issue. A taking occurs when a condemnor occupies land. There's nothing more permanent than taking the title to that land. We don't have a give-backs clause. We have a takings clause. And once that taking is complete, it's done. There's nothing more to be done. Here, Sierra Pacific voluntarily decided to take that final order of condemnation and record it and put the title to their property in their name. That has a significant constitutional component to it. It really finalizes the taking, and that's why at that point the condemnor can no longer just simply abandon and say, here, give back the property, I want my money back.
Well, counsel, assuming that the language of the statute's plain and what Mr. Chapman argues is consistent with the plain language, then your contention is that the statute, as plainly written, is unconstitutional. Is that your claim?
It's unconstitutional as applied here.
Could you make that argument, please?
Certainly. The statute for abandonment is certainly written to be, to give the condemnor as much room as possible to be able to abandon before entry of final, well, actually 30 days after entry of final judgment. So the legislature obviously wrote a statute that took it to the fullest constitutional limits possible. But there is a constitutional limit on that. And every court that's looked at it has found that that constitutional limit is when the taking is fully and finally complete. And they've all agreed at the latest that's when title fully vests. In certain areas, the federal courts, actually, they're under U.S. v. Sunset Cemetery that I cited, they had a statute that said that title vested upon filing a declaration of taking with the court. Therefore, once the federal government had filed that declaration, they could no longer abandon, they could no longer discontinue. They couldn't even amend the property description that they took because at that point, the title had vested. Here, title vests under NRS 37160 upon recording the final order of condemnation, which Sierra Pacific did.
But the title is only vesting in this case by virtue of the stipulation. Had there been no stipulation and the parties had proceeded under the language of the statute, title wouldn't have vested, right?
I respectfully disagree. In order to maintain possession during appeal, the statute's required Sierra Pacific to vest title in themselves. Under NRS 37170, they were required to pay out the judgment into court in order to remain in possession. They've agreed that that's true. Well, if you look at 37160, once that judgment is paid, they're required, the court is required to issue a final order of condemnation, and that final order of condemnation is required to be recorded, vesting title.
But under the definitional statutes, a final judgment is a different term than a final order of condemnation.
It is a different term.
And so what is it about the language of our statutes that's unconstitutional? Because our statutes set up a statutory scheme that results in the vesting of title, even under the stipulation in this case.
The statutes set up basically a policy where that the condemnor, once they know what it's going to cost to take this land, they can do one of two things. They can proceed to pay, invest title, and they're done, or they can abandon. Those are your options. You're not supposed to be doing both. And when you read
the statute specifically allows abandonment to occur up to 30 days from a final judgment.
Yeah, and this, that's correct, Your Honor. The statutes also say the condemnor is not required to pay that judgment until 30 days after final judgment. Those two statutes use the same language, giving the idea that you either pay and vest or you abandon. The complication comes in when you look at 37170, which requires the condemnor to remain in possession on appeal. They have to pay that judgment, which then kicks in the mandatory language of 160, which requires them to also vest title. It's an interesting complication. The other option a condemnor has when there is appeal is to relinquish possession of the property.
So your argument is that the presence of those options renders our statutory scheme unconstitutional?
It's not that the statutory scheme is unconstitutional. It's that there's a constitutional limit on the right to abandonment. The scheme itself works in most cases because this is the first time, frankly, I've ever seen a condemnor saying, I no longer want the property 7 months after they've vested title to it.
But isn't that slightly complicated by the fact that your client is saying, well, the money was good, it wasn't good enough, we want to go back into court and raise the ante. I'm sitting here and it's like a feeling of both parties want a do-over. I didn't think this was a golf game where you can buy a mulligan or something of that nature. That's what's going through my mind. I don't think the statute was intended to allow for a do-over, but that's what both parties seem to be putting forward. Your client accepted the money, pulled it out, paid off the other lien holders or people that had an interest in the property, and we're still in this unsettled mode, basically, what you're putting before the court.
Well, under 37170, the landowners fully accept the risk that if it's sent back and there's a new trial and the the new trial says we get less than what we got the first time around, we end up with a judgment against ourselves for that amount. The statutory scheme has that in it, and that the defendants have to accept that risk. The statutory scheme does not have the defendants accepting the risk of the condemned nor suddenly deciding to walk away after they've already taken title to the property. And that kind of leads into another point. 37170 also says that when the defendants take that, withdraw that money, they are abandoning any defense to the taking itself. They are agreeing at that point the taking is complete. The taking can't be attacked anymore. It's done. They've taken the property. They've vested title. The defendants agree that they can't attack the fact that the taking wasn't proper. That's all been abandoned. That issue is completely abandoned. The only thing that's left is exactly how much money. And the landowners never said they waived the right to appeal. There was some very significant value issues of evidence that was excluded below. We also never said Sierra Pacific couldn't appeal in that stipulation. I will have to agree with Mr. Chapman on that. The intent of that stipulation was to move things forward, to agree to certain things without going to motions, such as what the interest was. However, what the stipulation also showed, and this goes for equitable estoppel problem here, is that Sierra Pacific, during trial, they actually had a representative testify that we don't need to build this project this time. We don't really need the property right now, but we're going to build. And they went through trial, they got their judgment, they decided to pay it, they decided to vest title. And they also stipulated that the landowners were going to divide up this money as soon as the judgment was entered amongst all the other people. The landowners really relied on this. They relied on the fact that Sierra Pacific knew they weren't going to build this project right away because of the economic downturn, but they wanted to go forward anyway. They wanted to pay the money. They wanted to vest title. That was a fundamental change in position for these landowners because they actually did not withdraw the initial deposit that was put into court because they fought tooth and nail from the beginning that Sierra Pacific didn't actually need all this property. It comes to pass that they were right, but they made a fundamental change in position after the end of trial because Sierra Pacific kept pushing forward so hard, saying, no, we need all this property. We need all this property. We need all this property. And finally, they were like, fine. Well, then we want the money. And Sierra Pacific agreed to that. And I think that's where the equitable estoppel issue comes in, is there was reasonable reliance on what Sierra Pacific is doing, and there was a fundamental change in position that now, 7 months after they completed their taking, they suddenly say, we don't want it anymore, give us back our $4.4 million. After Sierra Pacific agreed that the lien holders could be paid off, after they knew that this money would be paid out to all the partners, there's about 300 different partners involved in this property. This is not a simple matter of someone just writing a $4.4 million check back to Sierra Pacific should they be abandoned. This was a significant distribution that they were well aware of when we were going into this stipulation. And then they vested title. And I just simply can't stress that enough, that every court, every federal court, the federal courts say under the U.S. Constitution, Fifth Amendment, taking is complete upon vesting of title, and the landowner is absolutely entitled to that money. You cannot abandon after that point. And I just have to keep going back to that point because this Sierra Pacific voluntarily vested title to themselves. They could have chose a different route. They could have chose to not possess the property anymore if they really wanted to see what would happen on appeal. They already knew they weren't going to construct. They didn't need to possess property on appeal, but they wanted to keep possessing the property. And so they vested title, and they completed the taking. And that's the constitutional limit.
So, counsel, on the motion that is before us, you oppose the motion.
Yes, Your Honor.
And want to maintain your right of appeal to the original stipulation? Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The original appeal is from the judgment based on the valuation issues. There's evidence excluded at trial that we believe should have been allowed in. That would have showed a higher valuation to the property. And we oppose this motion primarily. In the past, this court has refused to remand matters under Honeycutt when what the district court proposes would be contrary to law. And we submit that what the district court proposes to do by allowing them to now abandon is contrary to both the U.S. and Nevada Constitution's takings clause, because once that taking is complete, the right to abandonment is lost. And by not remanding at this point, we would submit that the appeal that's already currently stayed subject to the decision on this motion would continue forward at that point. And I just do want to kind of go back quickly to NRS 37170 for that process of the condemnor has to pay out money in order to maintain possession of the property. In the State Department of Highways versus Second Judicial District, this court actually suggested that that process is constitutionally required because it would be against the spirit of the Nevada Constitution to allow a condemnor to remain in definitely possession without paying the money. And I think that that concept flows.
I recognize the comments there, but what's the rationale? What's the provision in the Nevada Constitution that supports that contention or that statement?
Well, I think it's the spirit and intent of the takings clause, and that in Article 1, there is this idea that private property is very important.
Where in the convention notes of the Nevada Constitution do we find this spirit lurking?
I have to admit, Your Honor, I don't know where the spirit is lurking. I was taking from the court's own words and what their thoughts were on.
I'm wondering where they too found those spirits from.
Correct, Your Honor. There's a history in this state of protecting private property and landowners' rights to private property and their entitlement to just compensation when their property is taken. And I think that's a lot where that spirit comes from, and looking out for landowners, that they're not going to be subject to an abuse of the eminent domain process. Should Sierra Pacific now abandon, frankly, where else are they going to put this substation? This is when during trial they said this is where we need to put it. There's nowhere else to put it. Someday things are going to grow here again, and they're going to want to build that substation. Or are they going to come knocking on these landowners' door yet once again, and we're going to be right back here again? And that's where the problem lies. Once they've taken title to the property, they need to be told enough is enough. That's the constitutional limit. You've taken the right to just compensation is fixed. If they hadn't vested, then perhaps they still would have had a right to abandonment. But they chose to pay out the full amount of the judgment and to vest title. And that's where the constitutional limit lies. Unless anyone has any more questions, I believe that's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Hurt.
Thank you.
Mr. Chapman, I'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
First, I will address this comment that if you maintain possession under NRS 37170, that you've given up the rule, the right to abandon. I'll simply refer the court to subsection 2 of NRS 37180, where the statute specifically says that if you have taken possession of the property pending appeal pursuant to 37170, you will pay the damages related to that. So specifically, right by the words of the statute, you can do that.
Well, Silverton versus Porter, an Oregon case, held contrary and said that the transfer of title was kind of a demarcation line. What's your view about that?
Those are cases from different jurisdictions with a bit of a different scheme, but I think they're all trying to get to the same place, Your Honor, which is defining a point in time when the case is over. Our Nevada legislature has decided that that will be the final judgment of condemnation under 37009. Other states may say final order of condemnation, vesting of title, declaration of condemnation under a quick take procedure. There can be different
Silverton terms. Has a 60-day abandonment provision and a final judgment provision, but it nevertheless concluded that the transfer of title results in the termination of the abandonment right. Do you have any other observation about that case, or are you familiar with it?
I am familiar. I don't have any further observation with it. I simply believe that it's a different statutory scheme, which is maybe trying to get at the same place we all are, which is when do the rights of the parties terminate versus when are they still alive? We're still in the live portion of this case. And until there is an actual final judgment of condemnation, we have not lost the right of abandonment. You don't lose the right to abandon because you maintain possession of the property during an appeal. That's clear. I've also read the stipulation again, and I don't see anything in here which waives the rights of the parties in any regard. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chapman, do you have that record cite of the stipulation?
I don't know.
That's all right. I've got it in elsewhere. I just thought if you had it handy, I'd grab it.
Thank you, Governor.
Well, thank you very much to both of you for your arguments in this matter. This matter will stand submitted, and we'll take a brief recess while the court reconstitutes with the judge.